podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
Welcome, Michael from New Zealand, James Butler from England, and myself, three-point Spanish King from Australia. And what a test match. Unbelievable test match. We'll start with you, Michael. Unbelievable what England just did.
Look, it was really good cricket played by two good cricket teams, and England played the better cricket of the two. And I think you look at that, that was an outstanding innings from particularly Johnny Bairstow. I'd said before the innings that I thought he was one of the guys we had to, the two guys that I thought were the big concern were Crawley and Bairstow, because either of them could have taken the game away from us, and Bairstow did. Outstanding, outstanding cricket. And that's why you back guys that can attack. That's why you give them the chance, because they can win your test matches. And he did. New Zealand weren't clinical enough, but ultimately the credit has to go to England, because that was outstanding cricket. They played really well and they deserve to win.
We'll bring in James Butler. Unbelievable Johnny Bairstow. Amazingly, Ben Stokes hit four sixes, 75, but played a cameo role compared to what Johnny did. 135 off 92 balls, seven sixes. Anything short, he absolutely smashed.
They bowled far too much too short at him. I felt once he got going, there was a slightly shorter boundary and they just kept feeding him, thinking he was going to make a mistake, and he didn't do. But I just think, I mean, it's a fantastic advert for Test cricket. I mean, just going back to the day five part of this, Trent Bridge, I mean, they had to make the decision fairly early on day four what they were going to do in terms of pricing at that stage. Probably the wise money was on a boring draw on day five. So they offered free tickets. Yeah. 17,000 people have turned up. Probably a lot of those might never have been to a Test match before. So that can only be good, because they've, you would hope they've had their appetite whetted after watching that. But I mean, 226 fours, 23 sixes. That's the most boundaries ever scored in a single Test match.
Yes.
1,661 runs across the Test match. That is the most runs ever scored at Trent Bridge in a Test match. You know, you've got records being broken there. And two teams going big in the first innings, but always having a good, healthy, you know, scoring rate per over. You know, New Zealand went along at four and over for pretty much all of their first innings. England just about matched that in their first innings. After all of that, there was only 14 runs between them. It became a one innings match, didn't it, with the draw for us traditionalists and us boring people, looking as if it's going to be the favourite result. And obviously McCullum and Stokes had a slightly different idea on things.
To Michael, the emotional side of this, I mentioned to you backstage that I know exactly how you feel, because I had to put up with that in 2019 with Ben Stokes. So I'm very glad that you feel this way, because now you know how I feel. And unsurprisingly, you're actually doing this, because I couldn't actually do this, because if I did do that, I would be using every F-bomb imaginable. But just the emotional side, James brought up a very good point that Tom Latham just went a bit crazy there with his captaincy, just continued to bowl short, ball after ball after ball. Even when Ben Froakes came in, when they did get rid of Bairstow, short, short and short. Just the emotion behind that decision.
Look, I think that there was some variable bounce. Yeah. And there was a chance of a miss. There was a couple of mishits that just didn't go anywhere near a fielder. So you can sort of see a little bit of the rationale there, but ultimately this is being played on Trent Bridge. It's a ground that has a short square boundary, and particularly on one side. So if you've got a short boundary on one side, you don't bowl short at the batsman when there's a batsman that can access that short boundary on their leg side. You can do it when the short boundary is on the offside. It's really hard to lay back and play a cut for a ball outside leg stump. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard to ramp to pull a ball around with a short boundary to the leg side. So you look at that and you think that maybe there's some pretty poor captaincy there. I've let you know my thoughts on Latham's captaincy before, and hasn't been much that's changed my opinion in this test. I still think that I haven't seen him as a great captain, and I think it's part of the problem with having a captain from Canterbury, where the pitches are all one style and the outfields are all big and they are all a perfect oval. You don't develop that skill captaining growing up there that you do in Auckland or Wellington, where you've got, or Dunedin, where you've got unusually shaped grounds that you grow up playing on, and you actually have to think about your cricket. And I think, there have been some good captains from Canterbury. Fleming was there from there, but I think it wasn't smart cricket for the conditions. There's no problem bowling the odd short ball. But when you go for 59 runs and four overs, you kind of need to change your plan. And there was some changes, but I didn't think it was great. But you've got to say, as far as that goes, the credit needs to go to England for the execution, because a lot of teams, a lot of players would have got out, would have held out there. There was some really, while there was almost every ball hit for four or six, there were good balls in between there that were given some credit. The batsman didn't get everything. And I think you've got to say that was a special innings from Bairstow. And while there was, I think the captaincy was a problem. I think also the choice of bowlers for doing that. You've got a guy that's tall in the team who is good at bowling bounces and Tim Southey. And instead we bowled Matt Henry to do it, who's not got a great bouncer. That's poor. That could have been done better. I think Daryl Mitchell would have been a good guy to have brought on as well. The pace off the ball. I mean, the guy that specialises as a death bowler in T20 matches is someone that can take wickets when people are attacking. It would have been good to give him an over or two. And at the same time, New Zealand created enough opportunities. We dropped six catches and lost by five wickets. So the fielding was a factor there too.
Two things that spring to mind. I mean, I saw Johnny Bairstow's first last centuries. He took a while to get to three figures for Yorkshire, and it actually came at Trent Bridge, and he was very similar to that in the second part of that double hundred. He turned it into 205 and went bonkers against some very seasoned bowlers. It was, I described it as pretty much rude the way he behaved against them, because he was just bludgeoning them everywhere. And it's one day cricket as well, isn't it, these days? They trust themselves to hit these shots. They know with short boundaries that they can pretty much miss hit it for six, let alone hit it sweetly for six. There was one shot that Ben Stokes played off Bracewell, which I think is still going up. It was just a ridiculous six. And when England get into that mood and you've got Bairstow and Stokes who are ferocious hitters, you can get away from a team very quickly. And I think, Tom Latham, who doesn't captain all the time for New Zealand, you can cut him some slack, because it can be, I think they were shell-shocked a little bit by the game getting away from them so quickly. Because to be honest, I thought at tea and at lunch and probably at the start of play today that I had New Zealand's having a real chance today to win that. Because with England's tail being quite long, hasn't really been exposed in this series yet. Even today, if they got Bairstow out early, folks to come in, and then Potts, Broad, Anderson and Leach, New Zealand could have whipped through that tail quite quickly. So it was always on the cards that New Zealand only needed a couple of wickets and they could have sped through England's tail. It's just Bairstow was on a different planet today, wasn't he?
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls.
When they did get out best, I think it was 25 runs remaining. They did have a couple of chances. They had a run out with, Matt Henry on Ben Stokes, and a drop catch off Froakes. Now, if they would have taken that catch and made that run out, that would have made, as James, to James's point, very, very, very exciting finish. Well, it wasn't an exciting finish, but it could have been, it could have went tenfold.
If those two wickets had gone down, it would not have been a procession for those last 34 runs. Last 34 runs would have been, and that's, the fielding let New Zealand down. I thought Blundell had a great game with the bat, had a pretty shaky game with the gloves, which is disappointing because his keeping had been improving, but his batting had been going backwards. Now he's gone back to being a good batsman that can't catch. But I did want to also, something that James said that was like one day of T20 cricket. There were three batsmen in that test who'd come from the IPL. They averaged collective 98.8 in that test. Yeah, the guys who had been playing first-class cricket didn't do as well. There's a point where actually playing under that pressure, that pressure environment of the IPL, I think has made players better at the run chases and things like that. Playing against the top players under pressure, big crowd, all the noise. What's happened is the players have actually learned how to deal with that a little bit better. And you're seeing that those pressure situations. Daryl Mitchell stepped up, for New Zealand. And then Bairstow, there was pressure on, and he just acted as if he's just batting in a vacuum almost.
We saw that in the World Cup final as well, Michael. I hate to bring that up again, but the Butler and Stokes had no right to really fashion that partnership to get themselves back into that World Cup final. But because both had been in the IPL, both had been in similar situations, both had been in front of the cameras of the world before, it didn't. I think for them, it didn't feel quite such a big task as it might have done for somebody else not exposed to that kind of stuff. And I think I'm pleased today. Test cricket has got the headlines. That's going to be talked about for a long time, that match. But there's no doubt that white ball cricket is actually helping test match cricket, because you get days like that if you go back to when I was a kid, you'd never have had a chase like that. You'd never had days like that. 220 for three or something at close on day one was and fairly normal score. You don't get stuff like that anymore. And that's, white ball has a big part to play in that.
Yeah. I mean, it was considered, if you scored at three and over, that was going at a pretty good rate.
Yeah.
Like 270 on the first day, that's good cricket.
You'd be reckless. You'd be absolutely reckless.
Or you can't get out if you don't hit the ball. Yeah. If you don't hit it in the air. And now it's all about, I was chatting to one of the top coaches in New Zealand, who was talking about the change in what he wanted to see out of young cricketers. And he said, I don't want to see people limiting their game anymore. I want to see players, you can teach someone to limit their game when they get to test match level or when they get to first class cricket. At the moment, I want to see them learning how to score runs. I want to see them playing all of the shots. I want to see that developing. We can limit their game once they get to first class cricket. I don't want to see that happening at junior level, because, I want to have players that we can decide which three shots they're going to play, and they've got all of them in their bag.
Joe Root was interviewed ahead of, I think it was yesterday, and he was talking about how the modern day test player is totally within their rights and has the ability to kind of almost rewrite the coaching manual. And we saw him just a few moments later flick a paddle sweep into the over third man for six. And that's the way the game's going, and it needs to as well. If test cricket's going to stay alive, it needs to appeal to a younger audience. It needs to kind of get people interested. And I love test cricket, because you invest yourself in days one, two and three, and you reap the rewards on day five. And because you've given it so much, it actually means more when you see the final full stop. But there's definitely people have shorter attention spans. People access the game in a different way these days, YouTube and various social media and what have you. So you need to have days like today that excite them too, and bring a new generation into the game too. So it's important. I mean, it's a great advert as well for not having four-day cricket, because a fifth day like that would be wasted on if we were trying to condense the game into 4 days, it'd be wasted. But there's definitely a feeling, I think, in England, and I was tweeting about it earlier, that there will be times when this new positive McCullum Stokes axis of power will probably go out there and fall flat on its face. Bairstow will be out for the first ball today. Stokes won't get the runs he got, and England will lose by 150 runs. But I think I actually would prefer to see an England be positive like today and actually lose, than have situations like we've had in recent years where they could have chased 270 and not even bother going for it. Have a crack. Who knows, that the last four wickets could have shored up and seen it out for a draw anyway. But I think there's definitely a feeling of positivity. Everybody lurches far too far in this world. If England had lost today, it would have been back to square one. Everybody would have been... glasses half empty again. But the fact that England have won today, everybody would be thinking, oh, World Test champions, bring on the Ashes and all that kind of chat again. We're kind of not quite that far yet. But I think, yeah, it's good signs, I think, for England that they... And New Zealand seemed to bring the best out of England. Yeah, you go back to 2016, I think it was. We played a series where New Zealand were attacking. England thought, all right, we'll try and match them. This is the kind of style of one-day cricket we want to play. And then obviously both sides met in a very good World Cup final and England have been number one in the world in the white ball. England have got to find a way to try and do the same kind of rebuilding exercise. It needs rebuilding in Test cricket. Still a long way from the finished article. Still a few people in that team that are looking over their shoulders and for fear of their place, despite the fact they've won two Test matches in a row. Zach Crawley and I think Jack Leach are vulnerable in that side. But, you can't complain today. He's terrific.
Well, one thing I think we're going to see with McCullum is that he does bet players and he gives them a bit of time. He's not someone that... Very few players were in and out of the New Zealand team. And if they were, it was normally because they were a stopgap measure.
How long will he give? I mean, Zach Crawley has had, I think, 24 Test matches now. So it's not like his Test career started when Brendan McCullum first put the English tracksuit on. There is a history there prior to Brendan McCullum taking charge. He's been absolutely... he's been done over twice in this Test match. He got a 40-something at Lords where, you know, he actually got himself in and then chucked it away. You could replay Zach Crawley's last 20 dismissals and probably 19 of them would look exactly the same. And that's just kind of like pushing forward and edging to slip. How much will Brendan McCullum look at that, Michael, and think, well, actually, this has gone on too long now? Or does his tenure start? Is he true to his word that everybody starts from here, you're under my tenure now, and we're only two Test matches into your Test career?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how he'll see it. He'll back himself to bring out the best in Crawley. So, in saying that, he's not the selector. So he may be that he's not going to get a chance to make that decision. But he will. I'd say he'll look at them and say, "Have we got the material that I can work with?" And I think Crawley showed enough in that first Test in Lords to say that that 43 was a spicy pitch that he played attacking cricket and it came off. And that was a bit of a McCullum type innings. McCullum did very well when put into bat and when there was a bit on it and he found ways to be positive and score. I mean, I think it's true that McCullum has the highest average in the first inning in Test history, in the first innings when put into bat. I don't think anyone's got a better record than McCullum in that situation. And he did that by doing what he's got Crawley to do. So I think we'll see him give Crawley a bit more of a rope to learn how to play those innings.
Well, what about Leach, Michael? Because, Bracewell impressed me in the first innings. I mean, he came in and batted nicely as well. But he's only been bowling for 2 years, I think, in the bowling his office for 2 years. To me, he out-bowled Jack Leach, who's been bowling since he was a kid. Jack Leach, to me, looked like he'd got no kind of variations. He bowled the same speed all the way through. Do you think McCullum will see enough in Leach to persevere with Jack Leach, or will he look elsewhere there?
It's hard to know on that one, because McCullum didn't have a big history of trusting spinners. I think he will keep going with him for a bit. But it'll come down to what the things are that he's asking behind the scenes. If he's asking Leach to do some things and he's seeing him do them and they're not coming off just yet, he'll give him longer. If he's asked him to do stuff and he's not doing it, then he'll be out. You know, and that's you've got to understand sometimes that they ask players to and one of the things he talks about is that if he tells a player, this is the shot that I want you to play, and he plays that shot and gets out, he'll never drop that player for doing that. It's for playing the shots that they're not supposed to play. He said, if that's on, he said, look, if a cover drive's on and you play a cover drive and you get caught at slip, that's fine. But if there's no benefit from a cover drive and you play a cover drive and you get caught at slip, I'll get upset with that. You know, it's about the decision making rather than the execution. He said, we can work on the execution as long as you're making the right decisions. And I think the same thing comes with the bowling. If he's bowling the places he should be bowling and it's just not coming off for him, you persist. If he's not actually doing what the plan is, if executing the plan, then you go, oh, well, maybe it's time to find a new job.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
It isn't the first time that England have chased down a total at Trent Bridge against New Zealand. If you go back to 2004.
We don't need to go back to the history of New Zealand losing at Trent Bridge. It's quite a long storied history of the ground that really should suit us the most, seeing us finding ways to lose. Other than in matches that Richard Hadlee hasn't played, and we haven't done very well at Trent Bridge, and there's been a long time since matches that Richard Hadlee has played there.
Well, I was going to say that game is quite similar to this game here. I was trying to remember the batsman. I think it was Boucher and Thorpe that went on to make big scores in that game, not as destructive as Bairstow and Stokes, but they were chasing a similar scoreline, and they got it done pretty comfortably. Incidentally, Froakes was the last man standing, and I think Garrett Jones? Yeah. Incidentally, he was the last man standing in that, one of the last men standing in that test match. So I find that a little bit ironic that the keepers were standing, and it just felt this it's a very similar game without the destructivenesses of Bairstow and Stokes, as Michael said, because of IPL, because of white ball cricket. But amazingly, as fun as that day five was, not so much for Michael. The first 2 days were unbelievable for New Zealand. In particular, Michael, Tom Blundell and Daryl Mitchell, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, Daryl Mitchell. It's really neat seeing him being so successful, because we kind of knew that he would be, in terms of he'd had years of being a good player at domestic cricket, but you never know how someone's going to step up. And he really has stepped up well. It's good to see that that he's just continuing to go from strength to strength. And I think Jared Kimber put a thing on that he was the typical New Zealand cricketer. He was easy to underrate. He bowled a bit of medium pace. He's got a family member and who's a top sportsman. He ticks off all of the boxes. but what he's done is he knows his game and he's worked on his game. And the result of that is he goes in there. He's a guy that's played a lot of cricket. He's not come in as a 22-year-old, and he's built his game up, and now he's able to execute and deliver. And it's a great see. I mean, he scored 250 runs in that test and only got dismissed once. That's a pretty good result, really.
Fantastic result. The first innings for England, James, Ollie Pope, finally, after getting smashed on social media, getting smashed by everybody, made that impressive 145. We won't talk about Joe's 175 because that's average for Joe Root these days. But Ollie Pope was absolutely fantastic in this match.
I'm hoping, and I think he said the same, that this is the start now. This is the start of Ollie Pope actually kicking on, because everybody in England knows how good a player he can be. He's a very compact, very well organised. Some of the shots he plays through the offside are just dreamlike, aren't they? Tremendous cover drive, a little punch off his legs through mid-wicket, all the rest of it. He's got all the shots. Definitely got some fallibility. He's never batted at number three. And I think he's got to come to terms with that and a different mindset. But I was pleased in the first innings how he went through a period, I think, for about half an hour without really trying to score. He left the ball quite nicely and dug in. And he needs to do that. Now, the proof will be in the pudding, really, when he comes to a more spicy track, because that was a decent batting track, obviously, 500-odd, plays 500-odd. And he's got all of his runs, or majority of his runs, at the Oval, which is very similar to that. Headingley might be different. We'll see him tested, I'm sure. And he's not always going to score runs. But, that 145 can't do him any harm at all. In the same way, Daryl Mitchell's really taken the shirt for New Zealand and started to look like he owns it. Hopefully Ollie Pope will do that over the next year or so and make that number three position his own, because there's no doubt he's a terrific young player. And I think a lot of Ollie Pope stuff is in the head. It's between the ears. It's that that knowledge that he belongs, that knowledge that he's good enough, that knowledge that he's he's able to do that, and following the right processes when he gets to the crease so that he actually settles down, because he's been far too frenetic in the past and he needs to find a way of probably taking in a bit of an extra breath at times and just relaxing himself. And I think there were some signs that he was doing that. But the other man that has pleased me in this test match as well was Alex Lees. You know, a lot of people have been critical of Alex Lees. He's the new Dom Sibley kind of thing, and using that as an insult. But I think there's definite a journey for Alex Lees in this England Test team. And you look at his first Test match, he was out in single digits in both of them in the West Indies. He put a load of shots away and played within himself and went quite slow in the West Indies. And then he had a period where he was getting 20s and 30s and not kicking on. He obviously got 67 and then the 40-odd today, didn't he? And over 100 runs in this Test match. And definite signs that he's starting to feel a little bit more at home, starting to play a little bit more like I saw him when he played for Yorkshire and how he scored his runs for Durham. Yeah, I think we'll persevere with Alex Lees. They've got a good one there longer term.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I think that McCullum will be good for him too. One thing McCullum doesn't do is he doesn't force everyone to play like Brendan McCullum. Yeah. When he was captaining, Tom Latham did well under him because he encouraged Latham to limit his game and to find ways to be successful. And I think this could be, he could be a very good, I mean, he did that himself in his career. He took a time where he dropped a lot of his shots. He had a strike rate in the 40s for most of his time as an opener, McCullum, because that was what the team needed. And I think he will, he'll find ways to encourage. Look, I mean, I'm talking about him as if he's a super coach, and we don't know that this is going to be what he's going to do because he's never really coached first class cricket before. But from chatting to him and from, that's the sort of thing that he'll want to do, is bring out the best that this player does rather than make him play. He's not going to try and mould him into being a McCullum.
I think as well, Michael, you see in football all the time, a new manager comes in and whoever they are, you know, the chairman and stuff, we're going to give him a little bit of time. But if the players are doing all of this practicing and the manager's telling him all of this stuff and you start to lose, then that's when you start to lose a dressing room, isn't it? Because you think, well, we're doing everything he's telling us, but we're actually not winning. McCullum's come in and they've won twice. Two out of two. Yeah. You know, he can't get any better than that. And a lot of the stuff that he's obviously telling them behind the scenes, I mean, we're not privy to that, but he's obviously telling them to be positive, like you say, to get the most out of themselves. And a lot of them have said, well, we feel 10 foot tall. And it's bearing fruit, isn't it? You know, they're winning matches and they're starting to play good cricket. So they're going to not only respect him because he was a fantastic player, and a lot of these guys will have grown up watching the IPL and watching New Zealand, knowing what a player he was in all formats. But now he's come into their dressing room, he's making them feel good about themselves and they're winning. So it's a good cocktail, that.
Yeah, and in fact, 10 foot tall apparently is what he said in his first pre-match chat to them. He said, I want you to go out and play like you're 10 foot tall. Just play as if you're invincible and see how you go. You know, also knowing that he's not the selector and he's not going to drop them is probably also helpful.
It's going to be interesting to see how that goes, actually, because England actually haven't got a selector at the moment. I think this squad that England picked was picked for the first two Test matches. So there's no surprise, really, after winning the first Test, they made no changes. But I think Rob Key chaired a meeting with four other people, McCullum and Stokes being two of them. And they came to a decision that this was going to be the 13 for the first two Test matches. There's rumours that Ian Bell is being fitted up to be the chief selector or whatever, but how are they going to actually fit all of that together, and how much say a Stokes or a Key or a McCullum might have in that process? It's going to be interesting to see how that goes over the next few weeks.
Interestingly, when McCullum was captain of New Zealand, one of the main selectors they used for a while was the first class coaches. So he got all of the first class coaches to say which of the opposition players were the ones that caused them the most problems. And then they put that list together and they said, who came across the, you know, who's caused the opposition coaches the most problems? Let's pick those players. And that's how Colin de Grondheim ended up making the team.
Not a bad methodology, that. I like that.
Like everyone was saying, oh, yeah, all of our batsmen were finding facing Colin de Grondheim much more difficult than it should have been. Yeah. And they're like, well, why don't we give him a crack? He came and picked up 7 wickets against Pakistan, and it's like, oh, well, actually, maybe he is a better bowler than he looks like.
Because at first glance, de Grondheim looks pretty, well, dibbly dobbly, just trudges in and does his bit, doesn't he? But
he looks completely innocuous.
Yeah,
he looks
just like far better bowler than that, isn't he?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, he started out as a bowler and didn't make it. He came back as a batsman who bowled a little bit part time. They had the decision, why don't we give him the new ball as a counterpoint to Lockie Ferguson? So you had Auckland had Ferguson and de Grondheim opening the bowling, where you had the pace of of Ferguson, and then it was the really the idea was just to provide that point of difference so that the batsmen weren't able to settle. But de Grondheim ended up picking up almost as many wickets as Ferguson did, and I mean Ferguson was amazing for Auckland with the red ball in his hand. He averaged something like 17 at playing at Eden Park Outer Oval, which is. They disregard the batting at Eden Park Outer Oval because it's such a flat pitch that they say, well, if you can't score runs there, if you run scored there, don't count for anything. And when you've got a bowler averaging 17 on that pitch, you know that he's got the goods. Unfortunately, just can't get the legs and the miles into his legs to play Test cricket. But he was just picked just to have someone at the other end for Ferguson, and he's starting to cause the batsmen lots of problems. It was a bold call to pick him, but it was through that method of chatting to the coaches and saying who was causing you problems.
My name is Jacob, and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Trent Bolt just came off IPL. He's bowled almost 50 overs in this test match, which is quite extraordinary. He's picked up a 5-wicket haul in his first innings. Thoughts on his game today?
Look, I mean, outstanding. He picked up 8 wickets and had 3 drop catches. Yeah, he could have had 11. And what we saw in the first test was he bowled with great discipline without as much reward as he might have got. In this test, he got the reward. Trent Bolt had a pretty lean run in test cricket. He'd been very much watching Southey and Wagner pick up and Jameson pick up lots of wickets and thinking, what am I doing wrong? It's nice to see him have some returns. He's a quality bowler, and when he gets it right, one of the things with Trent Bolt that you'll notice, the batsman often has struggled to pick up the length, and it's because he used his wrist to adjust the length more than his release point. So you watch someone like Mitchell Starc, where he lets go of the ball will be quite different in terms of how high. If it's going to be a full ball, he lets go of the ball quite early. If it's going to be a short ball, he lets go of the ball quite late. The batsman can pick up the length from watching the release point. You can't do that as much with Trent Bolt because where he lets go of the ball is at roughly the same point, just changes his wrist position. Yeah. And the result of that means that while he's bowling 10Ks slower, the batsman actually has less time to respond to it. And so I think Ed Cowan said, they say that Starc's 10 kilometres an hour faster than Bolt, but you face it, you do not feel like that at all. It feels the opposite way around. So when he's doing that well, he's very hard to play, especially when he gets that late swing. So I think actually England played him really well despite his great result, because he was bowling, it was the sort of bowling that can run through a team, and he didn't do it despite getting all of those wickets.
Unfortunately, because Michael is from New Zealand, we have to start wrapping up this show because time constraints, because it's early in the morning where Michael is. It's 2 a.m. where I am. Like I said, you know how I feel when I watched 2019, how Headingley felt fantastic that night, that morning. Yeah. The next test match, England take an unsustainable 2-0 lead. They cannot be beaten for the series. They've won this series. What would you like to see New Zealand do for the next test match?
I'd like to see them bowl Ajaz Patel. I mean, I think Ajaz Patel needs a bowl, and I think Neil Wagner probably needs a bowl as well. I think those are pretty important things. As far as the batting goes, I mean, there's no point in making any changes here. You can't tell anything from two tests as far as batting goes, really, except that Daryl Mitchell is in the form of his life, and if Payne Williamson's back, you certainly don't want to see Mitchell getting dropped. What you do with Henry Nicholls, do you run Mitchell at 6 and have him as the all-rounder? Or do you say to Henry Nicholls, well, you may be the number 6 batsman in the world, you may average 100 against pace, but you've had a bad season, you've had a bad couple of matches, and Mitchell's just gone past you. Who knows? It'll be an interesting decision on that one.
Is Tom Latham in a bit of trouble?
No.
When it comes to his batting, this series has been very poor.
Look, new opening batsman batting in England, you're going to get good balls and you're going to get out. I mean, you don't drop an opening batsman who's got a career average of 40 because he's had a couple of bad innings. Averaging 40 as an opening batsman in New Zealand and England is actually bloody hard. There's only about four guys in the history of Test cricket who've averaged 40 as an opener in New Zealand over a decent number of Tests. You know, he's in the conversation for New Zealand's second best ever opening batsman after Glenn Turner. It's there's a pretty big logjam for who's second, and he's in that mix. You know, he's not dropping him. No.
Okay, so obviously Cameron Livingston comes back. What will you do with Cole Jamieson?
Well, if he can't bowl, he's not playing as a batsman. I know people rate his batting, and I think they're wrong. His first class average of 15 is, I think maybe is a little bit. I think maybe he's going to have an average of 20-ish in Test cricket, but you're not picking him as a batsman or an all rounder. If he can't bowl because of his bad back, then it's pretty straightforward. He doesn't play. And so if he's out, that brings Neil Wagner in to do that enforcer role. I can't see him playing. And actually, if there's a doubt about his back, you don't play him. It's one thing if it was a third test where it was all on the line, you'd maybe say, oh, you know, where it's a decider. There's no point risking Kyle Jamieson, a stress fracture turning into a strain turning into a stress fracture is not something you want to risk.
Michael, we will let Michael go. I'll continue to talk to James if James wants to hang around.
We'll catch you later.
Cheers, Michael.
Okay, no problem. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. And for James Butler, what would you like to see in the next test? Now, what do you do with Jack Leach? What do you do with Zach Crawley?
If we take away what our conversation with Michael and what Brendan McCullum might do, what I would do is tell Zach
I think Crawley, I know what you would do.
Well, I'd tell Zach Crawley to go back to Kent and score some runs and work on his game, because at the moment he's a walking wicket most of the time. Mm. You know that you get to test level and you face bowlers that know what they're doing with the ball, don't you?
Yeah.
Trent Bolt's going to stick it outside his off stump. Tim South is going to stick it outside his off stump. And at some stage, he might get away with, as he did at Lords, get away with five or six fluent cover drives before he edges, but at some stage he's going to edge. So Zach Crawley for me is mightily vulnerable. I think if it was down to me, Ben Compton would be the obvious person to come in and get his chance. He scored 80 for Kent again in this round of county championship matches, and he's averaging nearly 70 now in first class cricket. So he's had a superb start to the summer, albeit having only, I think he's only in his 15th first class game, and he's 28, 29, is he? But he's, you can't argue with those stats. Some people suggesting that he's a bit too slow. I think he's worth a shot on the basis of what he's done so far. As with Jack Leach, I just think he's just a little bit one-dimensional. I love him as a bloke. He's almost kind of got a cult hero status in England. He scored the one not out, he scored the 93 with the bat. But as a bowler, he's for me anyway, he's first, and if you actually think of a test match as having four innings, his first and second innings bowling has been dreadful statistically anywhere he's played. Third and fourth innings, he's bolstered his stats with some terrific bowling performances on tracks that turn, in the subcontinent most notably. But if you actually look at him as a package and look at him in this test match, as I say, he's been out bowled by Bracewell, and he looks like a decent batsman, an attacking batsman on a track that's not giving Leach anything, can just knock him around at will and hit him over the top when they want to. And you need somebody, if you're going to be a finger spinner, you need to be able to at least contain in the first few innings of the match, and Leach doesn't seem to be able to do that. So that's a concern for England, whether McCullum sticks with these guys and gives them this entire series to have a proper look at them, or whether he makes a change now. I probably think he's probably going to have a proper look at them. Harry Brook might have to bide his time, because Harry Brook is on the is the first cab off the rank when it comes to batting. But Johnny Bairstow, I think, has meant that Harry Brook is going to have to be a little bit more patient. I don't think that's necessarily an issue. Brook's time will come, and you can't drop Johnny Bairstow after he scored England's second fastest ever Test century. I think it's only one ball behind Gilbert Jessop's 1902 effort. So he's just lit up Trent Bridge this afternoon. You can't drop him. He's going to go into the Headingley Test match with a huge amount of confidence. So injuries permitting, and Stokes was limping around towards the end of that Test match, and it's going to be that'd be a major blow for England if Ben Stokes rocks up tomorrow with an injury in his knee or wherever it was. So hopefully, the fact that there is a bit of a break between this Test match and the third Test match gives Stokes the chance to recover. If he doesn't, it's going to be interesting to see who leads the team. And Ben Stokes takes two people to replace him, so that might change the balance of the side completely when it comes to Headingley. But yeah, Ben Stokes was terrific with the bat in both first and second innings, despite the fact that I felt he was a little bit too aggressive in the first innings. He threw his wicket away when he didn't need to. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of small potatoes when it comes to any gripes with Ben Stokes' leadership. I think he's been really good, actually. His field placings have been sensible, attacking when he can. So no problem with that, no issues with that at all. So I think in terms of England, it's certainly 9 out of 11 can take a lot of credit going into the next Test match. Ben Folkes has been very impressive indeed. Michael mentioned that Tom Blundell had some issues behind the stumps. The ball was wobbling after it went past the stumps, and Blundell wore a few on the end of his fingers. Folkes described it as being the hardest place he's ever kept Trent Bridge this week, because it was wobbling around, but he didn't really make it look that hard. And I think people are starting to actually realise that A, he's a tremendous keeper, and B, he can actually bat as well. You know, he's batted well in this series so far. So the longer England persevere with him, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, England are in a very healthy position of being able to go to Headingley. And if they make changes, they can make them offer from a position of strength. And if they decide to go with the same team, I don't think anybody could have too many complaints, albeit with Zach Crawley starting to come to very much the last chance saloon, if he's not already out the door and down the road from that. But yeah, England are in a good place, aren't they? As things, I mean, it's in a strange situation as well, where England stopped now for a 3-1-day international series in Amsterdam with a completely different squad, and then the test team regroups at Headingley in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, England 2-0 up, and both test matches have been far closer than they've looked. But England 2-0 up, we'll be very, very happy with the way the McCullum regime has started. I'll say goodbye to you all. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Lucas. Ta-ra, everybody.
Podcast Network.